This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Up the NT. I'm Angeline Tay. On this show, we try to up your business game by getting entrepreneurs to share their challenges and we learn from it. Innovation has become a buzzword where everybody wants to be part of it. Everyone is either disrupting or being disrupted. There are disruption consultants, conferences, and there's even a degree in disruption at University of Southern California. So I've decided to do a little bit of digging through Google to find out how did the hype come about. The hype of innovation started in 1997 when Clay Christensen published the book The Innovator's Dilemma. In his book, he argued that it isn't because their executives made bad decisions, but because they made good decisions. The same kind of good decisions that made those companies successful for decades. So here, the innovator's dilemma is that doing the right thing is the wrong thing. This is what was shared during the fifth enterprise breakaway this year. So today, to take us on a journey of growth through innovation, we'll be highlighting three established technopreneurs who were on stage at the breakaway event. First up, we have Hakim Karim, founder of Grid Markets, who harvests the power of a new market.
I'm Hakim Karim. I'm one of the co-founders of Grid Markets. We are a market for excess CPU capacity. Sounds extremely dull, I know. But just to explain what we're talking about here is some problems like graphics rendering, genome sequencing, various kinds of engineering problems require large amounts of processing power, hundreds or thousands of machines to do like heavy number crunching. And that becomes a very expensive proposition even for the largest of companies. And for small and medium-sized enterprises, it is increasingly a barrier to entry. Meanwhile, the irony of the situation is that most of the servers in the world are actually extremely underutilized. The average is 0.6%. Okay, so the global average across all servers is 0.6%. So there's this enormous amount of capacity that's sitting out there doing nothing. And meanwhile, there's all this demand and it just keeps growing exponentially because people want to do more and more complex things. The data sets just get larger, the complexity of the models just gets bigger, and this is obviously a difficult thing to do. And so that's where we come in. We are a market that allows institutions to trade their unused capacity with other institutions who need lots of it on a periodic basis.
We also have Li Ching Wei, founder of iMoney.
So my name is Ching. I'm the founder and CEO of iMoney Group. My background is in finance, investment consulting, so I spent some time in Australia. When I came back, returning residence, so you need things like credit cards, savings accounts. I went online, found out how difficult it was to find the best products. That spurred me to create iMoney. So in a nutshell, what we do is we empower consumers to find the best financial products. Things like credit cards, personal loans, home loans, fixed deposits. If I ask you a question today, you know, which bank is offering the best credit card for dining, you may not know. So we create a website that helps you, you know, in under a minute decide which product is best for you. And over time, we've evolved into actually helping you obtain that product as well. So rather than just, you know, telling you which product, we actually help you with the application. Today, we're about, you know, 1.8 million unique visitors across the group. We have operations in four countries. We work with pretty much all the banks, major banks in Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, Singapore. Yeah.
Lastly, Farouk Morali, founder of MClinica that is based in Philippines.
My name's Farouk Morali. I'm actually from Canada. I'm non-Malaysian, but I do love it here. So I'm actually based in the Philippines out of Manila. My background's in the pharmaceutical industry.
He used to cover the emerging markets, particularly in Southeast Asia. The problem is that pharmacies in other markets like Philippines, Vietnam, and Indonesia are independent. They are like mom-and-pop shops, and there are tens of thousands of them.
And so for a pharmaceutical company, it becomes challenging to access these pharmacies, the patients buying from these pharmacies, and then any data. This problem was ongoing, and I said, you know, I want to leave and I want to start MClinica. And the concept was, could you unite all of these fragmented pharmacies on one common platform, and in doing so, provide a direct channel for pharma companies to access the pharmacies, access the patients buying from them, and access data. And so that's what we did. We linked almost 3,500 pharmacies in the Philippines, which gives us consolidated access to around 80 million people. And then we extended to Indonesia and Vietnam.
But MClinica is also trying to address the social issue.
One thing we noticed was that the price of medicine was incredibly high. So to put things in perspective, in the Philippines, for one pill for diabetes, you can buy that one pill, or you buy a kilo and a half of rice. So there's an affordability challenge, there's an accessibility challenge. So part of how our program works is that at any one of the pharmacies in our network, you can receive an instant discount on the medicine and then get enrolled into a health education program that helps patients better understand what they're taking. So for us, it's very important that we have a commercial motivation as well as a social motivation. And the better we do as a business, the better patients do.
So what do these companies have to do with innovation? It just boils down to one thing.
Innovation is about the application of invention.
That's Hakim Karim from Grit Markets.
Such that it actually adds value in some real way. For example, in our case, the idea of using excess capacity is not actually anything new. It's been around, in fact, back from mainframe times. I mean, that's how you basically shared machines. But the idea that of you creating a market for that excess capacity is a new thing. So really it's about the application, I think, of an invention to a real-life problem. And certainly, you know, from our perspective of how we run our company is we made sure that there was a real market for this and that there was a real demand for something like this before we even did anything.
Or in the case of iMoney and mClinica, it's about disrupting the status quo and solving a problem.
For me, it's about doing something that disrupts the status quo and delivering value. When I first arrived back in Malaysia and the process of applying for financial products and opening up 5 different tabs and accessing each and every single bank, spending 30 minutes or so with each bank to get to an answer, right? With iMoney, we've managed to deliver, you know, financial decisions to consumers in 30 seconds. For me, that's, you know, a lot better way of comparing products, and that's how I would define innovation.
Generally, we look at innovation as that you either need to be solving a problem that hasn't been solved or solve a problem better than someone else does. And I think that's what innovation is. It can either be transformative, a 0 to 1, or it can be incremental. The way we look at our business is we look at the fundamental patient problem. How does a patient access care from their doctor, from their pharmacy? We look at that patient journey map and we see where the fail points are. I mean, we're all patients ourselves at some point. What are the things that frustrate us? And by looking at it from that perspective, we saw problems that no one was solving and problems that could be solved better. And that's how we look at how we innovate at mClinica.
The company mission is what made them stood out. A new application, new platform to disrupt the industry. So a question was posed whether if there's such a thing as over-innovation. Ching from iMoney and Farouk from mClinica have different views on this.
So I don't think so. I think the notion of innovation, the idea that you need to do something really different to be called an innovation is probably not the right one. You can do innovative stuff step by step, a little bit at a time. When we think about the way we run our business, it's about looking at that consumer journey and figuring out step by step what you can change to make it better. So one thing early in the days when we ran iMoney, we noticed people were leaving details on our website. And part of the process is that we would have someone calling up the customers and helping them with product selection. We found that through speaking to customers and feedback that some of them were not satisfied because they left their details in the morning but only got a phone call from us the next day, right? So one of the things we did was we switched around our process flow. During business hours, when you come to our website today, if you leave your details, you should get a call back within the first 5 minutes, and that created a wow factor.
I'll be the contrarian. I think you can over-innovate. And I think the classic issue is a startup with constrained resources and time. You want to solve every problem under the roof, right? You're seeing so many problems, especially in healthcare, it's massively broken. And we want to solve everything. But then you have no focus, right? So know the problem, know what you're solving for, and solve for that, and solve it better than anybody else.
As Farouk insists on having a focus, here he shares how he embeds innovation into his company.
I think the way you think about it is you don't think about innovation. You think about the problem first and really, really understand what problem are you trying to solve. There's a lot of startups out there that don't really solve problems, but they're very successful. But I think for all of us on this panel, we're solving very finite problems. And when you have the problem statement, it allows you to actually do the yes-no analysis and see, are you really solving that problem? Are you solving a related issue that is indirect, right? So think less about the innovation, think more about the problem that you're solving, and always bring that back because it creates focus.
As you heard from Ching earlier, the step-by-step process of innovation can be implemented at different parts of the organization. The example he gave was innovation at the customer experience level. Up next, we'll explore on how you can innovate while you expand, as well as preserving the innovative DNA as you grow. But bear in mind, cannibalism could happen. So stay with us and hear stories from iMoney, Grid Markets and mClinica. This is Up the NT, BFM 89.9. Good morning, you're still tuned to Up the NT with me, Angeline Tay. Today, we are revisiting the final session at the 5th Enterprise Breakaway. The topic is growth through innovation. If you've just joined us, on the panel that day, we had Lee Ching Wei, founder of iMoney, Hakim Karim, founder of Grid Markets, and Farooq Mirali, founder of mClinica. Earlier, we've established the definition of innovation based on each company. The reason for that is because no innovation is created equal. Farooq's idea is to find a solution to a problem while Ching is to disrupt the status quo, and Hakim says it's an application of invention. A company is built to solve a certain problem. That's innovation. But is it possible to innovate within the company? For example, say the HR department? So let's hear from Hakim on current challenges that they are facing.
Well, one, it's really one of growth, much like this gentleman here, you know, trying to grow a company is a challenge under any circumstance. For us particularly so, because we're actually a virtual organization. So in fact, we don't have an office. We don't actually have any two people in the same city even. So for us, that's quite a challenge in terms of how you kind of grow this organization. It's good in some ways because we're able to cast our net wide in terms of finding talent, and we find them all over the world, but then trying to integrate them in into one functioning organization is a challenge in itself. But I think given what our business is and given the fact that we are basically a cloud business and we are in the cloud, it doesn't almost make sense for us to be a centralized organization.
Hakim believes that the common shared vision is what keeps them on the ground.
I think it's about culture and values and about a common shared vision. We all know what we're working towards. In fact, we all know what the ultimate goal is. How we get there is what we're all trying to work out together.
On the other hand, Farooq faces challenges in localization.
It's challenges of localization. It's challenges of talent. It's challenges of creating controlled processes that you can scale with. These are all things that we think about. And until we get that right, we think about standardization before we think about expansion, right? So, you know, one of the things, the recent initiatives that we've done, we're in Philippines, Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand. We've created a guidebook for any new country manager who opens up one of our countries. It's a 60-day plan to go from zero to hero in 60 days. And it's basically all the processes that we've learned that help to do it. You have this guidebook, but you need localization. Every country is different, right? If we're to enter in Malaysia, which we are considering, the market is very different than what we're used to. We're dealing with retail pharmacies, but now we're moving to a dispensing physician market, right? How do we adapt? And I think that's the key to regional expansion.
As for iMoney, their challenge is to ensure innovation continues as they expand.
I think the fear is that as you grow, some of the essence or DNA of these things that work when you're small doesn't get translated down throughout the organization, especially when you're located in different geographies, when you have different offices, right? So first, that's the biggest challenge. So today, group-wide, we probably have about 120, 125 people. It's quite different sets of people that we have as well. So, you know, we've got group functions like technology, product, marketing. We run a call center. We've got different nationals in each market. So we think culture is very much driven from the top as well. So leading by examples, making sure some of the passion, some of the ideas, some of the, you know, key DNA is passed on to your next in line and ensuring that that gets passed on. It can get lost potentially if you grow quite quickly, especially when it comes to expanding into markets. So spending time and ensuring that somehow gets preserved is highly important.
How do you do that? Preserving the innovative values in the company. So we raised the question whether we can innovate at different levels.
I think you have to, because especially in an increasingly global market, and increasingly, if you're going to be a serious company in this world now, you cannot just be in one country, you cannot really just even be in one region, unless you want to get bought out or something, because you have to be global. So whether it's, you know, things like localization, whether it's things about particular regulations with markets that you might be in or whatever, you always have, whatever applies in some place may well not apply in another. And so you constantly need on the ground innovation based on some structure and process and all the stuff that we've been already talking about. But I think you do need that. Yeah. I think innovation has to be in everyone. The answers can't all be at the top. They're on the ground because they're the people who actually know what's going on.
And that's Google's secret of innovation as well. It is empowering its employees. Farooq takes their hiring process very seriously, as every hire affects the company.
Yes, I think you have to make the time. people are the most important part of an organization. Even though we're all in tech startups, I think all of us would agree, none of our tech would work without the people who built it, right? Or the people who operate it. So for us, very critical, a lot of my time is spent hiring. It's very important. It's core to how you do it. And every single hire you make is so important. You know, your company is as strong as the weakest link. For us, what we hire for always, our core value is hire smart, hire hungry. That's it. Because if they're smart, even if they don't know anything about the pharma industry, they'll figure it out. And if they're hungry, they won't sleep until they do.
The employees are one of the key stakeholders. Ching gives an example on how they take priority to listen to their stakeholders instead of focusing on their competition.
For us, I think we like to really focus on three things. The consumers. So what are the consumers are telling us? Our customers, in this case, the banks, the insurance companies, the advertisers that we work with, as well as our staff. Being aware of what competition is doing is important, but if you focus very much on consumers, if you focus on your customers, if you focus on your staff, I think that would get you a lot further. But the reason I mention those three points is because if you continue to listen to your key stakeholders and really focus on solving their problems, then sometimes you can get ahead. So one of our competitors have gone onto the market and really swamped the market with pricing, you know, essentially giving a lot more benefits to consumers to get products off their site. And from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense. Sustainability perspective, it doesn't make sense. We experimented, but we very quickly decided that it's not the strategy that we would like to take and rather continue to focus on those three things, right? And sure enough, I think today when we talk to some of our customers, they're telling us that, hey, these guys, whilst they're delivering volume, some of this volume have turned out to be poor quality. Consumers are complaining whilst the promise made by our competitors are great up front, but the delivery doesn't happen. My point is being focused on true things that matter to your company, even whilst you're facing with tough competition, is key.
Pivot is also another popular term within the business community. But as an entrepreneur or key decision maker, how do you know when it is time to change your focus?
This is when you kind of go down one direction and then you hit a wall and you're like, I don't know how to solve this problem that I was going after. And then you start to examine what resources do I have, what knowledge do I have that allows me to go and apply it to a different space where there's another problem. I think as an entrepreneur, we all have had situations where we've been like, are we in the right direction or maybe should we be veering off a little bit? I think you do need to have an open vision in terms of what to pursue. The point is that just try not to do so many things at the same time.
I mean, there's pivot from a business model perspective and there's adopting best practices or new tools or technologies or whatever. Any company of any size, frankly, you should be doing that all the time anyway, because there's always something new that potentially allows you to do something better. But that doesn't mean you have to adopt it, because obviously there's a cost of switching and things like that. So it doesn't matter on that level, you always have to do. But as far as pivoting on a business model is concerned, I think you have to be really know why you're doing it. Is it really a dead end, or you just haven't pushed hard enough? All these kinds of things are much harder questions to answer. But I think regardless of the kind of corporation you are, big or small, you always have to be looking at who's doing something better, whether it's using technology or processes or whatever it is. That's a constant thing.
When you change your business model as you pivot, that's part of innovation. And when that happens, sometimes you will have to kill your revenue model. For the lack of a better word, you basically cannibalized your own business. This is what happened to iMoney.
We actually had to do that a couple of times throughout the evolution of iMoney. When I started, I looked at successful models around the world. There's a company in the UK called Money Supermarket. They're hugely successful, listed. They run a business model of lead generation. So what they do would be similar to what we do, providing that financial comparison information, collecting customer details, and then they would then sell it to the banks. When we started, we essentially did roughly the same thing. We created a very successful business of selling leads to banks. There was a problem when we pass on leads to banks because not all have figured out how to handle these leads. And whilst it was really lucrative as a business standpoint, the real problem wasn't solved. So consumers aren't getting the products they want. So we ended up creating what we now term as the end-to-end model. Think about it from a customer experience standpoint. You would come to iMoney, you would leave your details. We would help you obtain the financial products by helping you with your application forms, your document collections, the whole works, right? So the end-to-end process. And I recall one of our higher revenue generating verticals when we first embarked. The next month, we pretty much lost all the revenue from lead generation and had to start again. But today, it's 10 times bigger.
It seems common. If you remember when I mentioned the book by Clay Christensen titled The Innovator's Dilemma, Hakim pretty much sums up on how you can solve this riddle.
But the important thing is, in the process of innovation, it has to be some constructive destruction in the process, and you have to kill, like, even your old way of doing things or the way that other people are doing things. Clayton Christensen obviously talks about the innovator's dilemma, you know, just before Steve Jobs passed away, that, you know, one of the things he said is, you know, the way to solve this riddle, this problem of the innovator's dilemma, is you just keep innovating. And even if it cannibalizes your own business, even if it means you change the way that you did things before, the fact is, if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. So I think it's in the onus of every enterprise of any kind to constantly be looking to rejuvenate what you're doing. Protecting your old way of doing things is just opening up a chink in your armor for somebody else to go do it.
So before we leave you, here's the final advice from the panel to all entrepreneurs out there.
Burn the ships. Seriously. Now, I think many of you corporate guys, as I was, trying to do it half-heartedly with one foot out the door and one foot in, you're probably never going to give it the full that it deserves, frankly. And you know what? Somebody else will. And that's the thing. That's what you're up against, right? You're up against yourself, but you're also up against everybody else who might do it too. And if you only half-heartedly do it, that's even worse than if you never did it at all.
There's never a good time to start a company. Got an idea you're passionate about and you believe you can execute.
You know, at the end of the day, my philosophy on life is really simple. It's about collecting stories for the grandchildren. One day when you're old and you have your grandchildren huddled around the fireplace and you're telling your stories, are they great stories? And part of doing the journeys that we do is because we think they're pretty great, and hopefully somebody does too, right? So think about that in terms of what are these chapters of your life, and are they truly great stories?
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Up the Ante. Do let me know what you think about the Innovator's Dilemma or any suggestions for the show by writing to us at enterprise@bfm.my or tweet us at BFM Radio. Thank you for listening. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.